Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today on Sticks In, it's Positive Friday, so we have a weekend preview show. We'll go through the entire college schedule. We'll talk about some noteworthy, very noteworthy midweek results. And before we get to the college games, we did get big PLL news this week, so we will talk about Water Dogs head coach Andy Copeland stepping down from his role there, what that means for him, what that means for the Water Dogs, how they go forward, all that kind of stuff. If you like the pod, please do leave a like, subscribe, download, give me a 5-star rating, all that good stuff. Thank you again for coming back. Let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks In. My name is Dan Arestia. Happy Positive Friday. We have a ton of great games in the college world and in the NLL world, too. If you listen to this on Friday, there's games tonight. There's games tomorrow. There's games Sunday. You got 9 indoor pro games this weekend. A couple of teams have the double dip. So we do absolutely positively need to start with the PLL news from this week, which unfortunately is not of the positive variety, but Andy Copeland has stepped down as head coach of the Water Dogs. The announcement came on Wednesday afternoon. In Copeland's statement, he did say he's going to hold on to an interim GM tag just as long as it takes to find his replacement. Copeland was the top dog, pun intended, since the team's launch in 2020. That first year for the Water Dogs, if you're new to the PLL or you don't remember all that well, was basically a nightmare. They were announced and built pre-COVID. So the roster gets assembled, the team gets announced. The team itself got announced after the first championship game. Paul was on the post-game broadcast, said they were going to be expanding in year two, adding a 7th team. Over the course of that offseason, they revealed that it would be the Water Dogs, the ties to Barstool, all that. You have the first expansion draft where players were pulled from the existing 6 teams. You had an entry draft. You had all kinds of stuff as the Water Dogs sort of started getting put together. And then COVID hits and cancels the entire summer. The PLL pivots. They hold their abbreviated season in a bubble environment in Utah. A couple of leagues were able to kind of put that kind of thing together. The NWSL did it, actually, I believe, at the same site like a week before the PLL did. And the PLL did theirs there. And some other leagues tried to, you know, figure stuff out a little bit. But the PLL has their 2020 season in a bubble in Utah. The Water Dogs' first practice ever together is basically a few days before they're supposed to play their first game. And again, it's COVID. It's not like these guys were sitting, you know, in New York City together and able to go down to, you know, find a cage and work out together, go to the gym together. Like, nobody could do anything. It was just completely on your own, like, shut in somewhere. And then in the opening moments of their first game, Zach Currier, their best player, I think gets a concussion and his bubble season's like over. So it was basically as brutal of a set of circumstances as you could get from jump. But then Copeland really starts to put his stamp on things. And this is where, when you look at his time, this is the kind of the era you point to as that first 2020 season, you know, being as hard as it was. And then he acquires Ryan Brown. He acquires Dylan Ward. He acquires Eli Gobrecht. He drafts Michael Sowers, and he drafts Ethan Walker. And he transforms the defense. He keeps building this versatile, dangerous, everybody who plays in it is kind of a one-size-fits-all kind of guy offense. Kieran McArdle has one of his best seasons ever as a pro for Copeland, and they go from basement dwelling expansion team in 2020, just trying to figure out who they are, to a PLL champion in 2022. and they're built to stay there. That's really where Copeland was most successful, is the way this roster's built. They were a last-second save away from repeating as PLL champions, and they just lost in overtime in the championship series. They will always compete because of how flexible and how good and deep their roster is. And this offseason, they stand to lose basically nobody. Nobody who played major impact minutes for them last summer, anyway. They are built to last 4 years and just stay atop the standings. The new coach's job is going to be come in and don't screw it up, basically. Who that new coach is, probably too early to tell, but it won't be too long before they figure it out just because we've got free agency starting next week. I have not tried to dig into too much about who it's going to be. I really don't have any info here. And with that caveat, I don't like to just throw names out and say, maybe that would be a good person. Maybe he's interested. Maybe the PLs, you know, when you do that kind of thing, sometimes it can have consequences for guys who are at their current jobs. So, you know, I find sometimes it's best to just refrain from doing it. I will probably try and start talking to some folks, see if I can dig up who's going to be on the list, who's interested, that kind of thing. The people, list of people looking for this job or that would do this job is not particularly long. Honestly, if you're listening to this and you follow the PLL over the last couple of years, you probably have a pretty good guess who the likely candidates for it would be. There are times when I think that a PLL coaching job is like the person who would do that is like the kind of person who would be president, which in my read, anybody who is smart enough and capable enough to do the job is probably also smart and capable enough to know that they shouldn't want the job or that it's not going to be a fun job. It takes very specific people for it to really be a good fit, and it gets harder every single year. It never gets easier. Forget like the coaching part of it, the scheme, the X's and O's part. Forget that part of it. Just consider the actual physical time requirements the job demands. You are on the road with the team every weekend, basically from Memorial Day through the end of September if you're playing for a title, which when you're talking about the Water Dogs is always on the table. Labor Day-ish at the earliest. If this person, this candidate is married, has kids, it means weekends away all summer. That is tough. It also means that if you coach in college, particularly at a high level, a D1 level, that kind of thing, you're probably not going to make it to a ton of recruiting weekend showcase, that kind of things. And that alone is a reason that big name college coaches probably don't take a PLL job. If it's PLL week 4 and you're traveling with, you know, the Water Dogs, and that same weekend there's a showcase somewhere and UVA and Duke are in some kid's ear and you're not, then you're falling behind because you're coaching a pro team 8 states away and the guys who are your competition are talking to the players that you want to be recruiting. And again, this is all before you even get to the idea of you need to be able to command the respect of a locker room full of pros, of stars among stars, and game planning in a way that utilizes the strengths of the best players in the world and gets a roster full of guys outside of the top 2 or 3 who have probably never had to do this in their career to buy into being a supporting cast guy. Again, these are stars among stars, the best in the world. All of them are always going to have been, you know, the best players on their teams, the go-to guys, that kind of thing. You as the coach have to then go to them and say, you're not that anymore for a lot of these guys. And you have to be the GM too. You got to cut guys. You got to trade guys. You got to tell guys we're not bringing you back. You got to tell guys you're a healthy scratch week in and week out. The job description is brutal, and it's not hard to understand how that kind of thing might burn somebody out pretty quick. Copeland is still coaching here in Connecticut. I'm sure I will go see some of his team's games this spring. I'm looking forward to that. There's no arguing the fact that the PLL is worse off without him. That's just the long and the short of it. He's a good quote for media purposes and all that stuff. He's a great coach. Players like him. There's no simple like-for-like replacement for an Andy Copeland. I personally will miss his post-games, his interactions with him. Wins or losses, he always had answers that were not just coach speak. He told you what happened in the game, what he thought the keys were. and he's going to give it to you straight, and it's not going to be, you know, the same sugar-coated stuff. So I realize, and this is kind of tangential to the whole story, but when this kind of thing happens, especially given how successful Copeland has been and how short of a time he's been with the league, that people want very specific answers and reasons for why he's deciding to step down. I know I had a few folks reach out to me wondering exactly what happened. Why is this happening? It's never simple. Never. I also know, look, I saw a couple of people saying, you know, if this was in the other sports, in the major sports, there would be, you know, deep dive reporting and specific reasoning going on, and lacrosse needs to have that. And to some extent, okay, yeah, maybe. There'd be some, all that kind of stuff and reporting, and you'd get all the specifics and all the dirty details. Like, maybe? Are you sure the big four sports have that? Are you sure you always get the whole story when a coach leaves a job in the big four? Just whatever Woj, Schefter, Passan, whoever else puts out there, that's the whole story? Or do you not really get the whole story until someone writes a book, like 10 years later? It's probably both, really. And maybe fans would be happier to know exactly what's going on behind the scenes at all times, unfettered, unfiltered, all unlimited access to this entire process at all times. I know we live in a world where that kind of thing, it maybe doesn't sound insane to ask for anymore. But one other thing that pro sports have that lacrosse maybe doesn't quite have yet, but it comes when your sport gets bigger, is there's kind of a detachment that happens between the fans and the people that are playing the game and coaching the game, the participants. They become, to the fans, to the talk radio callers, to the, you know, the internet posters, all that, just interchangeable pieces. And in the course of that happening, fans lose track of the, like, for lack of a better word, the humanity of the people involved. They have privacy. They have all that stuff. They still have all that. In lacrosse, that hasn't happened yet. There isn't this giant detachment, really. I don't think fans view these people as interchangeable pieces that you forget about the second they stop playing. Or you don't consider what they go through or what their lives are like, because their lives are very much still part of their athletic career in lacrosse. And I think in recent years, there has been a movement of empowerment for players in the big four sports in particular, where they demand a bit more acknowledgement that they are human beings and they deserve a modicum of your respect and respect for their privacy and their ability to tell their story on their terms. It's why guys like Draymond Green or the Kelseys have podcasts, and why athletes like to go to McAfee, because he's one of them. Skip the legacy media, skip the other crap. You get it right from me. I will let you know how I feel about it directly. You don't need all the other stuff, none of it's going to get lost because I'm going to tell it to you. Not everybody wants to do that, but also not everybody is entitled to access or to somebody else's story. You wanting to know exactly why it is and thinking you should doesn't mean you just get that information. It's not that simple. It never is, and it never really has been. I know you're used to seeing, you know, Jimmy Johnson leaves the Cowboys because him and Jerry Jones hate each other's guts, that kind of thing. Like, that gets revealed when those guys want it revealed, because it's their story. You don't get it just because you think whoever reported it actually did some deep dive and they found out something they weren't supposed to find out. When it comes to this kind of situation, leave it alone. That said, I do think stories like it are important. The point about it at least having something out there is fair. Lacrosse doesn't have that. We don't have the super deep investigative dives. We don't have the crazy access and everything because the lacrosse world is small, and every last bridge you have that gets burned, if you have a number of bridges and one of them gets burned, there's a good chance in lacrosse it sets fire to all the others. And a lot of people just have to deal with that. I don't know how that's fair or not. Something I've always wanted to try and have at Sticks In particular, when I first wanted to launch it, it was something I was really trying to be passionate about, and I kind of just haven't been able to get it progressing or rolling. And I want to find the right way to do it, but I want to have a place for the players and the coaches and the people around the sport who are playing it, the participants, the ones who are delivering this product to you, playing the lacrosse. I want to have a place for them to share how they're feeling about it, what they're thinking about it, what their experiences are like, anything they want to about their life as a pro athlete, college athlete, high school, whatever, anonymously or otherwise. I want to find a way for pro players to know that there's an outlet where their voice is going to be heard if they feel like it can't be, or if it needs to be amplified in some way. And if they're not sure if they can put their name on it for whatever reason, then I want to be able to be supportive of that. But it's the kind of thing I've wanted to get moving and try and offer to people. But I'm not sure how, but I want to try and ramp back up towards it because it feels like something that would be valuable for stories like this. I would bet there's a lot of players in the league who feel specific ways about Coach Copeland, about the way this has all happened, about the future, about the last couple of years playing for him, what they want to see going forward. And I don't know if that's something they want to share. Maybe they would share it if they didn't have to put their name on it. Maybe not. Maybe they want to put their name on it, but I want that to be available. So I don't know. If any players are listening to this and you want to do that, you know where to find me. But enough of that. That got a little too deep maybe for a positive Friday. Anyway, let's get into the college game. Let's get into the college results from the week. Start with the big one from Wednesday night. Army Cuse. I love the hell out of Army and Cuse every year. I have no idea if this is true, and I did not go and look, but it always feels like it's in the middle of the week. I don't know why that is to me. It always feels like it's like a Wednesday game. And it's always a good game. Wednesday night did not disappoint. 6 lead changes by my count in this one. The goal to give Army a 14-13 lead, a win in OT, that was their first lead since they went up 6-5. Jackson Eicher hit the game winner. IL had a great piece on this game and Eicher that you should go read. I believe Matt Kinnear wrote it. But Eicher missed last year with an ACL tear, and he's now Army's leading scorer. I think he's tied with Vish Burek, but leading scorer. He was a critical piece of their offense in this game. So it was an unbelievable moment to see him score that winner, to, you know, the cuts to obviously his family in the stands, who's getting emotional about it. How can you not love that kind of thing? Another story here, obviously, AJ Pilot holding Joey Spallina goalless. Although Joey did have 2 assists, he was 0-for-5 shooting. In the postgame, Christian Mule made the point, and it's a point that should be well taken. Joey is always going to get the top pull, and at worst, him in that matchup is going to open space for other people. That's going to happen every week he takes the field, goal scorer or not. So that said, if you ask me who won the fight, I think Pilot won the fight. I think he had a better day. But Army legit had a bunch of guys playing like first team All-Americans. Pilot for sure. I think Evan Plunkett for sure. Every time I see Plunkett carry the ball, he's applying pressure. He's so elusive. He's really dynamic and fun to watch. I think a story in this one, too, is the Cuse man up struggling a bit. Army did have 5 penalties to Cuse's 1 in this game, and Cuse only turned one of those man up opportunities into a goal. I think if you're playing a home game, you're in the dome against a top 5 team, you need to convert at a better clip on man up. Ultimately, I think Army remains my favorite pick for, you know, when somebody does the old name a team outside the ACC and Big Ten that can go to championship weekend, Army is the best pick for that, I think. They are good everywhere. And I think Albrecht is easily one of the best coaches in the sport. Easily. They are built to have an answer for everyone. Everyone. I mean everyone. Other midweek games, we had Jacksonville and Michigan, which was a battle for a while. Jacksonville had a halftime lead. I thought this might be the Jacksonville, you know, gets it right and puts it together for a half. I think they really did. But, you know, a 7-0 run from Michigan makes the difference late. The Dolphins could not win a faceoff, and that really felt like the difference in this one. All that possession just adds up. It just does. You know, it wasn't like Jacksonville was giving the ball away. They only had 13 turnovers, but they just didn't see enough of the ball because they couldn't win a faceoff. It's a good gritty win for Michigan. I think that's a good test and some adversity in that. And, you know, they have a tough game on the road and they come out with a win. I think, you know, it's a good positive to build on as you're getting Delaware this weekend now on a short week or a short rest, however you want to say it. But Jacksonville gets St. John's next, which you know, obviously you would expect them to win that game. The second best game of the week so far has been Loyola and Towson. And it was the best game of the week until we got the Army Cuse Classic. But Loyola Towson played on Tuesday, Hunter night, Tuesday for the Hunter, as Quint says. Towson's been kind of a surprise for me. They came into that game 3-1. I didn't think they'd be a bad team or anything like that, but the nature of their results has surprised me because they crushed Navy and St. Joe's. Impressive wins, impressive fashion to win the way they did in those games. Loyola as a team, look, three straight losses, but two outstanding teams. And then they have a win over the team that just beat number one. They beat Georgetown 18-10. So it's like, it's really hard to get a read on Loyola, I think. But however the game went, it felt like the result was going to be meaningful, was going to be a talking point for the winner, for the loser, for everybody. So it just had big game air about it to me. Ultimately, Remy Reynolds, the Rutgers transfer for Loyola, had the cause turnover, ground ball, fast break, pole goal for an OT winner as the time expired. I mean, what box does not get checked right there? That is in football, your defensive end in football, getting a strip sack, fumble recovery, return for a touchdown to win the game in OT on the last play of the game. Just pandemonium. So, I mean, the ending could not have been better there. Towson's a good team, though, man. I was planning on ranking them maybe this week. If they had won this game, I definitely would have ranked them this week. Not sure if I will now or not. It's hard to know what to make of Loyola and how to rate kind of their results right now because their schedule has been, you know, their wins and losses are what they are, but their losses are like, they're outstanding. So we'll get more to Loyola in a second let's just start looking through this weekend's games and we'll talk more Loyola when we get to their game this weekend. As you're listening on Friday, there's three today, including the opening of a very cool ACC Ivy League kind of doubleheader round robin thing happening. But the first game today on Friday is Canisius and Cleveland State. Canisius is -1.5 here at plus money. I've had a lot of fun with Canisius this year. I just feel like they've been not well read by the odds makers. So yeah, Michigan blew them out to start the season. But look, since then, it's a win over Bellarmine. It's a win over Bobby Moe and OT. They are not a bad team. They keep getting these big underdog lines. This week, they are a favorite. Cleveland State has played, you know, a difficult schedule. They've seen Ohio State. They've seen Notre Dame. But I cannot go against the Griffins now. Give me the value. Give me Canisius -1.5. Staying hot. The next game today, Duke and Penn. That's a really good test for Duke. Look, they've smacked Bellarmine, High Point, St. Joe's, Jacksonville. Time to play, you know, somebody a little bit better, Duke. So, honestly, Duke's schedule is the reason that I have ranked them at 2 and UVA at 1. But that's an aside. This is Duke's first game of the year with a number 1 next to their name. And it's their best opponent. Penn's offense, been figuring it out. Their defense and Emmett Carroll, I think, have been a key for them to keep things stable while that offense figures it out. But this is Penn's best test for that defense and for Emmett Carroll by a wide margin. Carroll's the key player in this game to me. The line is 7, and that feels kind of big. I'm going to take +7, Penn +7 in this one. I'm going to lean on Emmett Carroll to stay hot. He's been so good. Again, it's a whole other ball of wax what's coming at them this week, but I'm going to take Emmett Carroll and Penn to stay within 7 of Duke. The other IVACC game today on Friday, UNC and Princeton. Tigers come in off that loss to Maryland. Tar Heels off a loss to Hopkins, so both looking to avoid the two-game skid. Princeton's +2. There are some future megastars on the field in this one. Owen Duffy, Dom Petrimala for UNC. Obviously, Kabiri for Princeton has been electric so far. Lots of young offensive stars in this. I think, obviously, there's a great goalie matchup in this one with Gianfricaro and Krieg. They've both been so good to start the season. I look at the face-off spot as a place of interest. UNC is using kind of a battery of guys, a number of guys. And I would, you know, I've been meaning to try and ask the face-off pros or the face-off experts, because I am very much not that. But how the face-off by committee, the unit, the battery approach, helps a young guy like Brady Wambach, who's been really good, to get adjusted at the D1 level? Does that help him at all? Does it make it harder? Does it make it easier? What is it like for a guy who's a freshman, who's a first-year guy, and there's an established senior on that team, to do it as a group? What's the advantages there for the young guy? I'm looking for a close one here, I think. I will be on Princeton +2 to overcome what I anticipate. They'll have a face-off deficit in this game. I think UNC will win the face-off battle. But Princeton's, I think, will have a solid defense against a young Tar Heel group. So I'm going to go with Princeton +2 against Carolina. Siena and Dartmouth. Dartmouth comes in off a loss to Lehigh from earlier in the week. Siena has won 2 straight, covered in 3 straight. The 2 wins are Lowell and Lemoyne, so it might not do a ton for you. But Siena is still a team that returned a really good core of leaders, of experience. And look, they had that rough start, but they're looking better. That NJIT loss suddenly doesn't look so bad to start the season. Dartmouth, for me, trends up a little bit more every week. You know, it's Kerwin year one. It's going to be bumpy as you kind of, you know, build a new culture and build a new roster, that kind of stuff. But they do not look like a bad team. They don't look bad at all. 3.5 goals here is a lot. And the Big Green have been not great against the spread like the rest of the Ivy. So I'm going to take the Saints here. Give me Siena plus the 3.5. Lehigh and Villanova. Nova's -1.5. They won last week against Colgate pretty handily. They've covered in 2 straight. Lehigh comes in off that win, as we just said, over Dartmouth. They've also covered in 2 straight after playing Cornell to a 4-goal game. I think Scott Cole had 5 goals against Dartmouth this week. I think there's a matchup there with, I don't know if it's going to be with David Ivancik, but if it is, that'll be good. That'll be a good little game within the game there. Assuming Nova, you know, kind of goes that way. I think I've danced around it long enough and people have guessed it, but I might just be a Nova hater. I don't know. Maybe I am, but I don't love Nova this year. Don't love the Cats. Not sure why. Something about them. The vibes are off. I'm going to take Lehigh and the goals. Give me Lehigh +1.5. Give me Lehigh winning outright. Why not? Monmouth and Mount St. Mary's. Monmouth comes in off a win against Wagner. The Mount has yet to notch a win this year. Mount hasn't covered this year either. They haven't scored more than 7 goals in the game. Look, I love Mitchell Dunham as a player for the Mount. I think he's a pro at the LSM spot. But the Mount offense just does not inspire confidence in me. So the line here is Monmouth -3.5. I'm going to take the fight in Bryce Wasserman's to cover. Give me Monmouth -3.5. Next up, we got Bellarmine and Marist. Bellarmine beat Hampton last week, lost to Canisius the week before. Marist is 3-1, beat Hofstra last week, has a win over Jacksonville. Their only loss is UMass. The Red Fox is on the road here, but I am not hopping off the train now. Bellarmine is a money line favorite, but Marist is +1.5 at trash value. I'm not really considering value because I don't actually bet the game, but I'm just going to take Marist. Give me Marist +1.5. I think they win outright anyway. Richmond and Binghamton. Look, Richmond's going to win the game. The question is how you feel about this line. 10 goals. 10. Binghamton lost to Lafayette by 7 a week ago. But Binghamton also played Jacksonville to a 1-goal game. They played the Bonnies to OT. So I have no idea how to parse that. How to know who the real Binghamton is. Richmond is the better team. I am also just a sucker for the really, really big line. So give me Binghamton +10 against Richmond. Double-digit line, I can't say no. Georgetown and Brown. This is one of my 3 favorite games this week. One of my most interesting games this week. You might be able to guess why. If not, I write about this one every week. I write my 3 favorite games in our little extended preview. So you can head to sticksinlacrosse.com and read what about Georgetown and Brown has me so fired up. But I'm excited for Georgetown Brown. Next, we got Manhattan and Bryant. Manhattan comes in 0-4, lost to NJIT a week ago. Bryant is 3-1, but they dropped a game to Quinnipiac a week ago. That was surprising. I have not been very high on the Bobcats, and certainly I thought Bryant was the better team. To see them lose outright as a 6-goal favorite in that game was definitely surprising. I still think Bryant's offense is fast. I think they're fun. They are once again a 6-goal favorite here. I have learned nothing, so give me Bryant. I will take Bryant -6 against Manhattan. Bucknell and Holy Cross. Bucknell comes in off that heartbreaker to Harvard that was played in Connecticut. They held a 7-goal lead in that game, and it evaporated in the second half. Bucknell has a very solid group of young stars, particularly at the midfield. I think Randolfo and Brunner are both really good. They're really good. But it's tough to rely on a freshman to maybe be your top Dodger in Randolfo. So I do think the Bison have more good games in them this year than bad. So I'm going to take Bucknell -6 against Holy Cross. A lot of favorites for me this week, I think. Colgate and Loyola. Loyola, we kind of talked about it a little bit. They're a 1.5 goal favorite here off that OT win against Towson. They now have wins over Georgetown and Towson and losses to Maryland, Hopkins, and Rutgers. That's a schedule, man. Colgate beat Penn State, Hobart, Albany. They lost to Cuse, Yale, Villanova. Those losses aren't close, by the way. I'll say it. The shine is coming off of Colgate for me here. The Penn State win was great. You cannot just trade on that forever. I do think it's hard to get a read on Loyola, but I am liking their trajectory more than Colgate's. So I'm going to take Loyola, feeling good off the Towson win, to stay hot. Give me the Hounds -1.5 against Colgate. Cornell and Ohio State. This is the second of my three favorite games of the week. Again, if you want to hear about what I like so much about Cornell and Ohio State, head to sticksandlacrosse.com and check that out. I'll give you a hint. There's a kid named Firth who you need to start watching for the Big Red. Delaware and Michigan. This is a good one. If I did four favorite games, this would be my fourth. Michigan gutted out a come-from-behind victory against Jacksonville midweek, so that they're kind of on the quick turnaround. Delaware, a last-second, I believe, post-hit away from Mike Robinson, away from taking Penn to OT, but they do lose that game by a goal. Delaware, they've only played three games. They got wins over Lafayette and St. John's, and then obviously the Penn loss. So Michigan at this point has seen two more games worth of action to kind of get things right. They've won four straight. The opponents on Michigan's schedule have been pretty medium. Jacksonville was the best opponent in that four-game stretch. This game feels like it should be a Michigan win, but I'm going to take the goals. I'm going to take Delaware +1.5 against Michigan. VMI and Detroit Mercy. VMI is a 4.5 goal favorite. They have wins against Queens, Hampton, and the Bonnies. Losses to High Point and Cleveland State. I don't know what you really draw from that. Detroit Mercy has played in, they've only played one game this year. The blowout loss to Notre Dame. So it's kind of hard to know how to get a read on the Titans. You don't learn a lot from that Notre Dame game, really. I think 4.5 is a lot, but give me Rusterucci and VMI. I'm taking the Cadets. Give me VMI -4.5. Drexel Sacred Heart. Dragons are a 4.5 goal favorite. They are 2-1. All three of their games have been one goal games, I believe. Two wins are in OT. They just have a knack for the extra time, I guess. Sacred Heart is a perfect, I believe, 5-0 against the spread. They have won two straight games. I'm going to take them here. I'm going to say Drexel keeps playing these close games and Sacred Heart's good against the spread. So give me Sacred Heart +4.5 to stay within that margin of Drexel. UVM and Harvard. Harvard is -6.5 here. They are now 4-0 on the season. Their 2-0 record against the spread is the best in the Ivy by a wide margin, by at least a two-game margin. I think it could be kind of a long year for UVM. They lost so much to graduation and the portal and everything. I think they may have an edge facing off in this game, which could help them stay close. I don't think Harvard faces off particularly well, and Harvard's banged up, but I'm going to take UVM to stay within 7 goals. But Harvard's going to 5-0. Jacksonville and St. John's. Jacksonville, as we said, is off that loss to Michigan. Johnny's got their first win of the year against Queens this week. They are on the turnaround that's kind of quick. The line here is 7.5. I think Jacksonville started the year slow, which is unusual for them, I think. You know, usually they're that team that's kind of a spoiler out of the gate. But I thought they looked much better against Michigan. 7.5 is a lot, but I think the Finns are putting it together. So give me Jacksonville to put a beating on St. John's. Jacksonville -7.5. Wagner and NJIT. NJIT is a 5-goal favorite, hammering it, crushing it, betting the rent on it. I've been a Highlander fan my entire life, undefeated, never lost. NJIT -5, not even looking back. Penn State and Yale. This is at Penn State. Whenever you get these, it's still February or early March games at Penn State, I'm always checking the weather, man, because if it's indoors, I want to be on the over. But it has one of the higher totals of the weekend, and it should. I think it's like 27.5 is the total in this game. neither defense, I don't think, is in a great spot. Penn State, I think, is missing some of their top personnel. Yale has had question marks on defense for a couple of seasons now. Patrick Pisano has been very good for the Bulldogs through a couple of games, and I think that's a promising sign, you know, getting another good quality pull down low for them. Yale's a 1.5 goal favorite in this at plus money. So obviously Penn State's getting goals at horrible value. Yale's attack, I think, is still banged up. I would just as soon, I think, stay away from this game. But since I pick every game, I'm going to take Penn State plus 1.5 at the bad value. But really, this is a game I'll just watch to see just a shitload of goals get scored. Towson and UMBC. UMBC won last week against Mount St. Mary's. They got the loss to Drexel. They haven't seen nearly as much action as Towson has, obviously. Towson, you know, as we said, is off the Loyola loss. That could maybe be a factor if you think about the recovery time and all that. I still like Towson in this one. I like Konstantinides to dominate facing off for them, I think. And the Tigers offense can pile it up. I think them playing some make it take it, you know, makes the 4.5 and the short rest not scare me. So give me Towson minus 4.5 against the Retrievers. BU and Navy. Navy has betrayed me. I loved their start to the season. And then as soon as I went public about my love for their start of their season, they got bad. Maybe I betrayed them. Maybe that's my fault. I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, I think the way to beat BU is to outpossess them and just keep the ball from them. But I think BU is going to have a big face-off edge here. So it's you couple that with Pat Morrison probably deleting somebody and just, you know, the Terriers are going to grind them down, I think. It's a 4-goal line. I'm still going to take BU. I'm going to take the Terriers minus 4 to beat Navy. Fairfield and Providence. Fairfield coming off their first win of the season. They beat Wagner. They're battle-tested. Wagner isn't a test, but look, they played a close game against Lehigh, and then they had a not-so-close game against UNC. The Stags are plus 1.5. Providence coming off the OT win against Brown. Ocean State battles, always nice to get the win there, even if Brown is down. But I'm going to take the Friars. I do think Fairfield is putting things together, though. This is a tough one for me to pick. I'm going to take Providence. But I will not be surprised if Fairfield wins that game. Stony Brook and Hampton. Stony Brook's minus 18. And, you know, look, I like huge lines as much as anybody else. But Hampton hasn't covered yet this year, even with those lines that can be up in the teens. So give me the Seawolves here, minus 18. Rutgers and Hofstra. Rutgers comes in after beating Loyola soundly, 13-5. They also have wins over Lehigh and Stony Brook. Hofstra's got wins against Wagner, St. John's, Siena. Losses to Navy and Marist. I have been on a bit of an island with my contention that Hofstra is actually good. I guess this is where we find out how right or wrong I am. Both these teams are bad against the spread. I'm going to take the big line here. Give me Hofstra. Plus 8.5. Hofstra staying within 9 goals of Rutgers. UVA and Hopkins. Hopkins has won 4 straight, covered in 4 straight, against Towson, Georgetown, Loyola, UNC. That's being hot, folks. I think they kind of found their footing a bit after that OT loss to Denver. Got the system shocked a little bit in the opening. UVA is, as I'm sure you've noted when I listed their wins, the best opponent that Hopkins has played by a wide margin. UVA has wins over Michigan, Richmond, Ohio State. So fair to say this is UVA's best test so far, too. Hopkins is plus 3.5 here. And my thinking here is if Richmond can stay within 4 goals of Virginia, Hopkins can too. So give me the Jays on the road in this one. Give me Hopkins plus the 3.5. Marquette and Utah. Marquette's lost 2 straight to Notre Dame and Michigan. They gave up 20-plus in both games, which is a tough look, man. Utah just hung 22 on UVM for their first win of the season. Utah needs to play fast to do their thing. Teams with a face-off edge who can limit the pace disrupt Utah a ton. I think Marquette might be able to do some of that. Marquette's minus 1.5 at plus money and is a slight money line dog, but not a great game to actually bet, I don't think. I'm going to take Marquette here and get nuts. Give me Marquette minus 1.5 against Utah. Why not? Let's get crazy. Merrimack and Quinnipiac, Battle of the Yaks. The undefeated Quinnipiac Bobcats shows what I know. They're 3-0 with wins over Bryant and Brown, not to be taken lightly. They're also 3-0 against the spread. Merrimack has lost 4 straight and failed to cover in 3 straight. Ugh. I can't bring myself to go against the hot team from Connecticut. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for ever doubting you, Quinnipiac. The Bobcats are my pick. Bobcats minus 2.5. UMass at Albany. UMass is minus 3.5 here against a winless Danes team. It kind of feels like UMass is still trading on their one goal loss to Army a bit. I think UMass is good, but goals, I don't know. For some reason, I get the feeling this might be a rock fight kind of game. So I'm going to take the goals. I'm going to take Albany plus 3.5 in this one in a low scoring, kind of grinded out, like I said, a rock fight kind of a game. Hobart and Bobby Moe. Robert Morris comes in off an OT loss to Canisius. Their only win right now is the Bonnies. Hobart lost to Cornell, and their lone win is Canisius, common opponent. Just by common opponents, you're probably going to take the Statesman here, but look, Hobart's banged up. They have yet to cover this year, so I'm going to take Robert Morris. Give me Bobby Moe plus 1.5 to maybe even win outright against Hobart. LIU and UMass Lowell. Lowell is winless. LIU comes in at 2-1. Their wins are Merrimack and Lindenwood. I really don't have a ton of feel for this game, I'll be honest here, but I'm going to take LIU minus 4 because I do not love the Hawks. Cuse and High Point, quick turnaround here after the OT battle midweek for Syracuse. High Point's won 3 straight. Last week they beat Cleveland State. Look, the High Point wins are not impressive, and they got waxed by Duke. This is not, you're not playing Queens here. There's no lineup right now on DraftKings at the time I'm recording this. I'll update the spreadsheet and everything, you know, as it comes out. I presume it's because the Q's Army game is still too fresh, but outside of like a comically large line, like ridiculously large, I'll be on Syracuse in this game. Denver and Lemoyne. Well, for the first time, Lemoyne is not favored in a game this year. Lemoyne is plus 11 at visiting the Pios. This could be your welcome wagon to D1 kind of game. Look, I think Lemoyne is good. I don't have them making the tournament, but look, they can hang with teams in D1. Denver is just a different kind of beast, though. I don't think they have the defense. Lemoyne, I should say, doesn't have the defense to handle Silstrop. I think Stathicus is going to make life very difficult for them. Because I am an optimist and because I love to pull for the little guy, I am going to take Lemoyne here and the 11 goals, but this will be an interesting one for sure. Give me Lemoyne plus 11. Looking towards Sunday now, St. Joe's and Air Force. Let's just be clear about one thing. I will never, never renounce my title of guy who is entirely too high on St. Joe's every year. That will always be me. That said, the Hawks have started the year 0-3 straight up, 0-3 against the spread. I unofficially have Levi Anderson leading the nation in post-hit. The Hawks' schedule has not been easy. I did not anticipate them being winless, though. Air Force is a tough out. They played Denver tight. They beat Stony Brook. They're plus 2 here. I'm going to take the close game. I'm going to take the plus 2 goals, but I think St. Joe's is going to win this game at home. Close game. St. Joe's wins. Lafayette and Army, as Q's doesn't have a line, this one didn't have one yet as I sit here recording this. I would imagine just because Q's Army is still fresh. Army is a contender. We talked about them above. We don't have to rehash all that. Lafayette has won 3 straight. They get Army on short rest. This is by far their best opponent. Delaware beat Lafayette by 8 goals, and I consider Army to be several goals better than Delaware. Unless this line is like north of a dozen, it would have to be a lot for me to take Lafayette. I'm going to be on Army probably here. And now we get to the second half of this double dip kind of thing. We get Duke and Princeton. Very cool. I like this. I hope we do this more. UNC and Penn will be the other half of this battle, but no line available yet. Both these teams have obviously their Friday contest first, so it's all going to depend on that. My initial read, without having a sports almanac and knowing the future, is to go with Duke here. But this is going to be fun. I mean, like, that's going to be a good game. Notre Dame and Maryland. Obviously, this is one of my favorites for the week. And this is how, to peel the curtain back, I'm going to try and drive traffic to my site. Head over to sticksinlacrosse.com and read what is so fun and going to be so good about the matchup between Notre Dame and Maryland. Why I like that game so much. And then to close it all out, we got UNC and Penn. Like Duke Princeton, second half of the Ivy ACC weekend. As with the other game, there's no line for this yet. They had all that all is going to depend on what happens on Friday. My initial take here is to go with the heels, who I think will have a face-off edge in a big way in this game. But I think goalie battle in that game could be really good. Could be really good. Emmett Carroll and Colin Krieg are two of the best in the business. So I will take kind of a low scorer there, but the heels I'm looking at, you know, it'll depend on the line, but the heels with a face-off edge kind of just tilting things just a little bit. And that's the slate. That's a jam-packed weekend, man. We've got NLL action tonight. 9 games this weekend, multiple squads on the double dip. Second half of the indoor pro season is underway for playoff push time. There's PLL free agency is going to start heating up now. I have some content coming there. Some of it's coming for Lax Culture Daily. So you can read that when it drops, and that'll have you ready for all the mayhem as PLL free agency opens on March 4th. The top 20 could get absolutely lit on fire and become a mess this weekend. There are feasibly paths to like 5 different teams being number one on Monday. That's the best kind of weekend to look forward to right there. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the games. Enjoy the lacrosse. Happy Positive Friday. And we will see you next week. Thanks for sticking around.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.